I'm Dan Orlovsky. When I'm looking for safety, I always take the extra steps and listen to Chris and Case on the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions with it, second and goal from the eight, down six, but on the move. Chris, working from the gun, looks out to the right, now checks out that Viking defense. Takes the snap, back to pass, looks right, got Case in the end zone, touchdown Detroit Lions! That's it, packs the bag, starts the plane, this game is over! How big is that?
And now it's time to start the Detroit Lions podcast.
Lions fans, it's time for the podcast you've been waiting for. The show where Kool-Aid runs blue, faces turn red, and rose-colored glasses never go out of style. This is the Detroit Lions podcast, your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection. And now, the guys people are talking about when they discuss monkeys and footballs. Chris and Case.
Hey, howdy ho, Lions fans. Welcome to the Detroit Lions podcast. This is episode 148, and this is the official Detroit Lions podcast for Reddit. I am your host, Chris, and a dashing host at that. And with me is my good friend and co-host, Case. How are you doing, my man?
Chris, I apologize that I missed our recording last week. Hear that things went a little off the rails.
Well, Riz might have missed one or two. Well, we'll just ignore that. We'll move on. We got a good show today. We're going to break down all the latest in Lions free agent action and maybe some of what happened last week, too. We're going to talk about the Lions cap, the space, what's going on, what have we done, where are we at, and what can we do with it. And then we are going to be joined by the one and only Dean Blandino. He's going to talk about the upcoming league meetings. He's going to give us some Lions insider info, and we have a giant announcement. There's a whole lot more going on the show. It's a great show lined up for you guys this week. Case, you ready to go, my man?
I'm so hyped for that Gore signing.
Let's kick this off and break it down.
All right, it's time for a couple of quick announcements. Case, are you holding on to your hat? You got your pants off? You ready for this?
I'm so ready.
It's the live draft party episode. What is this, our third annual? This is huge stuff, man. And it's going to be big this year. Something like something you've never seen. It's going to be awesome. Make sure you tune in. First day of the draft, we'll be there. We'll be live. We'll be broadcasting, and we're going to have a riot. It is our draft party. You guys will be able to call in, but you're just going to love it. I'm telling you, check it out. We'll be streaming live, and we'll have more and more details on that as it comes closer. Make sure to check us out and help us out on Patreon. Special thanks to Dylan from
Guam,
Michael, Matt, Eric, Joel, Nick, Noodle, Jeffrey, Brendan, Benjamin, Justin, John, Ross, Matthew, Morgan, Peter, Randy, Matt G, Kalen, Scott, Greg, Lucas, David, Richard, Bryce, Chug Nasty, Fight Me, Case, Mike K, Floundericious, Ryan, Zach, Gina, Miak, Malcolm, Dan, Gary, Peter Von Panda, Skyler, Mario, Lucas, Tim, Nicholas, Jesse, Pilo, Wingsman 1, Jason, Ryan, Cameron, Paul, Taylor, Adam, Ken F, Neil, Stuck in Wildcat Blue, Nathaniel, and of course, our very first donor, Mathis. Also, want to call out our newest patrons, Lance, Thomas, Troy, Jacob, Brandon, Doral. I'm shooting here, guy. You can hit me with a pronunciation. Help me out. You're brand new. Doral just joined us. And of course, Brian B. from the band I Prevail. Check them out, iprevailband.com. Great, great music. Brian's a huge supporter of the show. And we love having him as one of our Patreon supporters. Check us out at patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast, or just go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on the Patreon link. Everybody who shares gets a little bit of that side action and the extra content we're providing for them, for the Patreon listeners on the show. And you help us out. You guys help us make this show keep coming to you every week and help create this draft party. That's going to be so, so great. So thank you all from the bottom of our hearts for donating. And if you can, join the Patreon crew and give us a couple bucks a month and support the show. Don't forget to give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and on the Twitter cheese, Twitter machine at DETLionsPodcast. DET Lions Podcast. We're looking for more followers, so make sure to follow us. It's the very best place to see Case,
Sin pantalones.
Oh, si, senor. Rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. We love those reviews. Those five-star reviews are the most heartfelt, heartwarming, and we love getting those from you guys. And if you want to have some fun in the comments, make sure to do it. Get your pants off and leave us a great review and some great comments. Those are much, much appreciated. Lastly, don't forget to give us a call via Skype. It's all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. If you leave us a message, we'll put you on the show.
Tighten your chin straps, kids. It's time to review This Week in Reddit.
All right, it's time to talk about all the fun and exciting things going down this week in Reddit, and we're beginning what's now becoming a weekly segment. It's called the Riz Was Wrong segment. Oh, my God. Riz, I feel bad for you, buddy.
Is this where I throw a smoke bomb and scream Guam really loud?
That might work. It might just work. No one's giving you shit, right? We are. Let's just start there. We are, but no one outside of us is giving you shit. But people love to point that out.
Not for this, anyway.
No. People love to point it out. They love when people are wrong. And I got to tell you, I was part of the wrong train with you last week. So let's kind of rehash a little bit. We'll go back. At the time, all the tweets and information we had Frank Gore signed and in Detroit as a done deal. We were
looking at a tweet from Justin Rogers that said, you know, Frank Gore is in the building and I forget what the exact thing was, but it was like, he's not leaving. He's either leaving without a contract or without a hand or something like that.
Yeah. And I think Rappaport had something too. I don't remember. But so we did that. We hung up the phone. It was like, yeah, that was a good show. Like they always are, of course. But it was not 20 minutes later before he didn't sign. It's like, oh, my God. Right here. We got this whole thing about it. And then that's where my wrongness ends. And Riz doubles down.
See, this is what happens when I'm not here for a week.
Yes. I'll blame you, Kate.
Riz doubles down and goes talking about all the different ways and reasons why we are
so excited
signing LeGarrette Blount.
Damn it.
So, all right, Riz. So again, it's only us giving you crap. These things are out of your control, and we only have the information we have at the time. And that's the fun part about free agency. We could finish this show again today, and something could change really quick. But I want to start with you, Riz. If you don't mind, let's talk about the signing of LeGarrette Blount.
Okay. Why not?
And why it was going to happen. It was such a good move.
I would have preferred Frank Gore. First off, let me say that.
He signed in Miami later. That was interesting. Because he wasn't preferred. Do you prefer him more for the Lions or overall as a back? Let's start there.
Overall as a back.
Interesting. Okay.
And I think Blount fits what the Lions need, which is a guy who can get the ball from a stationary position, run forward, and find a hole where he can squeeze through for 2 yards on third and two. I think he'll be very good at that. And he's improved his game quite a bit over the years at short yardage. Because if you remember when he came in, he was a terrible short yardage back, despite the fact that he's a physical beast. He just didn't have the mindset for it. He's developed that over the years, which is fantastic.
Now, let me ask you, because last year the problem was we'd have guys that could squeeze for 2 yards, but it was on third and six. Are we going to be in those third and two positions this year?
Well, I think having a healthy offensive line is going to help a whole lot. Not playing, what was it, four different left guards, I think it was.
Yeah.
With Joe Dahl and Emmett Cleary. Hey, I remember his name without having to look it up. That's pretty good. I'm
perfect.
I'm happy about that.
Former Cowboy.
That's right. Yes. Yes, he was.
And I think he likes to be known as a former Lion now.
Who wouldn't?
Right. Former NFL player Emmett Cleary. And I mean, Brian Mahalik will not be around anymore. So just getting a full year of Decker and Wagner at the ends and TJ Lang healthy and Graham Glasgow, God bless, if we can get him for a full year at center.
And I'm hopefully without Ron Prince.
Yes, Ron Prince.
Hopefully we get the improvement from the coaching staff.
Ron Prince is now stealing money from the University of Michigan, which is also paying Pep Hamilton to steal money from them. My God, what the fuck is Harbaugh doing?
And
he's hiring the worst possible people at Michigan.
I have to tell you, though, that's something that not many people have connected the dots on the offensive line. And I think what we're going to see, I mean, everyone loves to rail on Ron Prince. Yeah, okay, great. And people talk about our needs on offensive line, but I think Ron Prince being gone, I think what we saw from that offensive line, from the players we have in that offensive line last year, was the floor. I think we saw the bottom of what these guys are going to do, and then you add the injury into the mix, and it's even worse. But I expect quite a rebound out of those guys this year, and I think it's going to be a pleasant surprise for a lot of people.
I think so, too.
Here's what I want to say about Blount is it wasn't exciting to me, you know, at all when I heard it, but as always is the case, you know, when we sign a guy, I start looking into things and find reasons for optimism. First of all, if you talk to any Philadelphia Eagles fans and probably any New England fans, they love the guy. I didn't see a single, you know, Eagles fan bash him in any of the threads. I mean, they were very happy with the amount of effort he put forth, what he did for them, even though it wasn't, you know, I mean, 766 yards isn't like amazing. He did have a couple of 100 plus yard games, but just like the effort that he gives. And then I went, you know, and I haven't necessarily gone through all his game film, but I did pull up a highlight reel from last year, and it was surprisingly long. I was shocked at how many highlight worthy plays he had last year. And he runs with a style that we haven't had a running back run with in quite some time. Even Bell was more like controlled, I want to say. Blount runs with this like wild animal like abandon, and his arms fling, like his, not his ball carrying arm, but his other arm is always like flinging around in the air, and it looks like a madman, and maybe that's a, you know, that's an attitude thing that we could use in the run game. So I don't know, I'm not necessarily like ecstatic about it, but I think there is cause for optimism. Now I don't expect this signing to be a reason we don't. And I've gotten into a couple debates about this on the sub, but I don't think this signing is the end of our, you know, movement on the running back front. I do still expect a signing in the draft, but there's reason to be hopeful that he adds an element.
It definitely for this year gives us a little bit of flexibility, but I have a feeling that it doesn't change the immediacy and urgency for a need for a running back.
Well, there's nothing long term. I mean, Theo Riddick is the only back, roster worthy back. He might be the only back, I'm not sure, we have in contract after this year. So like, and I'm not even 100% sure, you know, they'd save a significant amount of money by cutting him next offseason.
Well, don't so, forget.
I love Zach Zenner.
And he will always right. be, he'll always have a place in this
right.
team.
and we could talk about Zenner too. But Zenner's signing, you know, I've looked into it and I've heard a couple different things, but I don't think from what I've seen that they'd lose anything and lose any money from cutting Zenner before the year starts. So I don't think he's a lock at this point to make the 53. So
what do you think? Liz?
I don't think he's a lock either. I think he is the first to go.
I think Washington is probably the first to go, but that's my opinion on it.
Oh, that could be. I think Washington still offers you a very little bit as a potential return man. But I'm looking at he's cheaper. He is at $650, and Zenner is making $925, and he's already gotten his $125,000 bonus.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And watching Zenner at the Tampa game last year in the pregame warmups trying to do punt returns, kick return,
that's not his thing.
There was a little bit of sun, and I have to give him, you know, a little bit of a leeway for that, because the sun was messing with everybody trying to do it, but he was definitely low man on the ability pole on that one.
No, return man is one thing, but he only, you know, he was only active for 8 games, but Zenner was a decent special teams player last year.
He has a role on the team. It's just I would like to see other people that offer more on the offense. Right.
than
right. that. I think that's why I suggest that. I think if they're looking to build long term, and I think they are, I still think I would be surprised if it's in the first round, because I don't think that's the MO of either of these guys or this team, or, you know, there's just no reason in my mind to believe that that's likely. But a second or third rounder is, you know, I think that's highly,
that's what I expect too. So, I think that leads to a little bit this. I think Lions fans, and we're guilty of this too, the three of us are, of drafting for what we are looking at right now. And I don't think that's what Quinn's doing. I think he's drafting for where this team is going to be in 2019 and 2020.
I absolutely agree.
Because we saw last year rookies, they don't have a problem keeping Tease Tabor as a healthy scratch as a second round pick. And they didn't flinch about that at all. It was no big deal. That's not something that most teams do.
He needs some speed though if he doesn't want to stay a healthy scratch. He better get some speed going or something, because
we'll see about that hamstring.
But no, you're right, Riz, for sure. To hold on to him, I mean, I worry about that pick. That's probably one of the Quinn picks that
well, if he has one tanker every year, he had Jimmy Landis the first year. If he had Tabor last year, then I think we're okay with that. As long as it's not the first round pick, because that would be
second round pick hurts.
Yes, it does. It does. Second round picks. And I've gathered this from talking to a lot of people around the league. Second round picks are like the most valuable thing, because they're much more cost controlled than the first round picks, but those players come in without the expectation of having to deliver right away.
Right.
And I think I think you're going to see a whole lot of teams trying to get extra second round picks this year. The Lions perhaps being one of them.
Interesting. Yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge. Say no more.
Know what I mean? Yep. All right. Let's move on. We signed the volleyball Owen Wilson's brother, Luke. So this is a good signing. I mean, we talked last week about the Ebron cut. We can talk a little bit about his high quality and what's the word I'm looking for? The fine way in which he departed the city. But Luke Wilson is not, I don't think, a bad pickup. He's not Eric Ebron. But when you set up when you set up this offense, you don't necessarily need an Eric Ebron, because your tight end is going to be used differently.
I completely agree. Yeah. But he is the bargain bin Eric Ebron, but we're paying him like the bargain bin Eric Ebron, so it makes sense. He's also probably a much better run blocker than Eric Ebron, but
that's not saying a great deal, but yes,
no, you're right. No, it's not. It's not. I should definitely specify. He's not a good blocker. From everything I've seen, he is not a good blocker.
He can block. I saw him play at Rice. They had two tight ends. They had Vance McDonald from that team too, and they played both of those guys as like it wasn't really flexed out, but it wasn't really in line either. They were like two steps out from the tackles, and either offset or one of them would go in motion. It was weird, but they did do a whole lot of like the cross field blocking and going out and picking off targets at the second level. And that's not something that he did a whole lot of at Seattle, because their offensive line coach is a freaking joke. He's now Gruden's coach in Oakland. Good luck with that. And that just wasn't something that they needed him to do. He does have that potential to be a moving blocker, to get out and you know, seal off the backside linebacker, or to undercut the safety, or you know, those sorts of things. He has that ability, and I've seen him do that in college. I assume he can still do it now. And I like the guy. I think the problem is, if you Google him and drop, you're going to see the very last ball he was thrown last year, and it's worse than anything Ebron has ever done.
It was a pretty hit him big in the chest, boner,
and hit him in both hands, and hit him in the chest, and hit him in the crotch, and hit him in both hands, and hit the ground.
Yeah, it was a bad one. It was a bad one.
Did he look like he was trying to catch it?
He looked like he was trying to throw a wet cat.
Yeah, okay.
Riz and I had
a little bit of an argument about Ebron with the catching on the video I posted on Twitter this last week, where he gave up on that play. And I know it's just one play, but to me, that was like a window to his soul. He just was never fully there. He's not, he just wasn't 110%.
Oh no, see, I did not disagree with your thing that he gave up on the play. My contention was that it was a dumbass play because you're asking him to go across the formation to block a defensive end that the inline tight end could not get to.
Right.
On that side, it's an absolutely debacle of a play structure, and that you're setting him up for failure to do that. That's not a guy that you want to mentally tax by making him set up to fail like
no,
that.
No, you're right.
That's asinine. It's coaching malpractice. And it's one of the reasons why I'm happy that Caldwell's going on, that I hope that Jim Bob doesn't have free reign to do stupid shit like that anymore.
Right. No, and you're 100% right. That play was a bust. But the thing that I saw was a tale of two different players. Riddick, number one, was not giving up for anything. He was out there scampering for his life and doing whatever he could to salvage that damn play. And Eric Ebron was looking at the sideline, pouting. And then he realized, oh, my God, the play's still going. And he realized too late, and finally they got Riddick. And instead of being a man and walking over and giving a hand to get Riddick up, or even taking part or joining his teammates and saying, oh, my bad, right? Even if he doesn't think it's his bad, right? You walk in, and that's what the teammate does. This post bag goes whining to the sideline again. It was like, you are absolutely not a team player. You are not committed to the game, and you are the cancer of the world. And I know a lot of players like him. I know, you know, people like him as a player, but that kind of attitude right there, I've seen so many people at so many different levels with that kind of attitude, and nothing pisses me off more than the guy that doesn't give a shit and doesn't try. That's the worst. It's the worst player in the world, and it shows, it's a window to their soul.
That is not something we have to worry about with Luke Wilson.
No, it's not.
Sorry. Okay, I interrupted you earlier, Case. Go ahead. I just needed to bitch about Ebron one last time.
Luke Wilson has nice hair. But no, I mean, he was much like Blount in his history with the Eagles and New England. Luke Wilson, while nobody in Seattle thinks that Luke Wilson is an elite player, they're not, you know, trying to pretend that. They do like him. They do think he's a good, you know, a positive, you know, figure in the locker room. A positive, just like, he works hard. He puts in effort. He might be limited in certain areas, but you never have to worry about him in terms of creating issues. So whether or not, you know, that's worth the drop in talent, that's tough to say. But if you have an entire team that can get, you know, on the same page and not have any of those type of guys on the team, I think that's generally a boon.
Yep. All right. We'll move on to the next one. You know, we got a heck of a deal and a great, great savings in Luke Wilson over Eric Ebron. Next player, Brandstatter wants to weigh in on, and it's Nevin Lawson.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Detroit Lions just got hosed.
I feel like Brandstatter's right when you look at that contract. That's a lot of money for Nevin Lawson. What do you guys think?
It is a lot of money until you look around the league and see what happened in the cornerback market this free agency. It was absolutely insane. Did you see the contract that DJ Hayden, who couldn't even manage to beat Nevin Lawson out for a starting job, got? Yeah. It's seven, like 21 million over 3 years, yes, and a ton of guaranteed money.
He got a lot more than Nevin Lawson did.
So if you put it in the context of what happened in free agency for that market this year, it's really not that bad a contract. It would be preferable if, because we went into this free agency and I'm thinking, man, we are signing, you know, one of these, because there were tons of cornerbacks. So I was expecting the complete opposite thing to happen. So this is where I will admit my wrong in this offseason.
There's going to be plenty of opportunity, Case. Don't worry.
But no, I like all these guys, all these like second tier guys who could all have been decent, you know, number two starting cornerbacks, all just getting absolutely ridiculous deals, like you'd expect them to be the number one. And I don't know what happened. I'm still like, I think there was some degree of some poorly managed teams driving the price on the market way higher than it should have been. I don't know. That's just a thought on the situation. But no, I mean, it sounds like a lot, and you know, people are going to get upset about it. But whenever there's a contract, you have to put it in the context of what else is going on. And what else is going on is that everybody at that position was getting overpaid. So to overpay Nevin Lawson by a little bit is much better than paying somebody like DJ Hayden, like way overpaid.
Sure.
So
let me ask the state's number one talent evaluator, but last place prognosticator, Riz, how are we going to use Lawson this year? Where are we going to see him on the field? Will he be the number two again?
I don't think so. I think he's going to be the slot, but he will play outside. He gives you that ability. I think the starters are going to be Slay and Shed, and I think Tabor will be the third outside corner. He might beat Shed out for that. We'll see. And Lawson can play that inside slot. He's going to give you depth. He can possibly even play a little bit of safety if you want him to, the way Diggs moved back last year.
That's what I was thinking.
The thing is, now the number one takeaway for me with this is they have four cornerbacks that they're comfortable with, which means they're not drafting one.
Yeah,
that makes me happy.
yeah.
At least not in the first couple of days. That need is gone.
Whenever you get past the third round, it's all, you know.
Exactly. But when Todd McShay mocks them, Minka Fitzpatrick in the first round, you can just tell him to go fuck himself because he's wrong.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to call Todd McShay and tell him he's right based on our prognosticator. sorry, Riz. I can't stop, and I really should. All right. Let's move on. I like the defense.
I'm happy with Nevin Lawson, and I'm looking now. You can get out of his contract after this year, and it costs you $1.125 million. That's not a bad poison pill.
Yeah.
For a 26-year-old who is scheme versatile, who's a very good tackler out in space, who can do a whole lot of things for you. I think he's a very quality player. He's not a guy that you want as your number one corner. He's not. He's your number two, probably number three, and he's very good at that. And for the rate they got him at, they're paying him a lot less than a lot of teams are paying number two corners. So I'm very thrilled with that.
Okay, really quick, we've got a wild Dean was spotted.
Hey, Dean Blandino here, and I can tell you unequivocally that call was 100% wrong.
Okay, there you go, Riz.
I've seen that highlight. I've seen that highlight of the Packers bomb that Nevin Lawson got the PI that was bullshit on like four times in the last week. Drives me crazy. I know that Nevin Lawson has a reputation for PI calls, but that one in particular was absolute bullshit, and I'm still super bitter about it.
And we'll talk about that a little bit when Blandino does make his appearance here. But the other piece, let's talk about the defense in a little bit more of a, I guess let's talk about Sly Williams first, and then we'll take a broader look at the defense. We signed Sly Williams because, you know, we've been missing the nose tackle since Jerry Ball. And we're all set now, right, Riz?
Jerry Ball reference. Oh, my God. Wow.
All right. Sorry, kids. You're not going to get that one. But go ahead. Take us away, Riz.
Google it. I'm going to pretend that I have some idea what's going on.
Come on. Jerry Ball was the man. He was the man. People always talk about Barry Sanders, how great he was. But they never, you know, same era, right? Jerry Ball. Come on, guys. You got to know your Lions.
He was a good player, to your credit. He's we talked a little bit before we started recording this. We all like Sly Williams. I think we're all in favor of the signing, which is and I think we all see the same sort of thing, is that he's for what they're paying him, $4.5 million for the year, is a little bit on the steep side, but at the same time, they had to pay him that to get him here because he did have other offers. He did have other suitors. It's almost a fully guaranteed deal. It's a one-year thing. He's 29 years old. He's a quality nose tackle. He's an above-average starting nose tackle. They didn't have that last year, so I'm happy with it. He did not fit. This is where you can read things into this. He did not fit all that well in the 4-3 front that he played in Tennessee, as well as he did in the 3-4 in Denver when he was there. So is this a tip off that we're going to be playing a 3-4 more than we're playing a 4-3? Is it a tip off that we're playing a 3-3-5, a 3-5-3? Who knows? Amorphous defense is what it tells me. And I'm happy with that.
Yeah. I tell you, I think we're going to see more 3-3-5 than anything else. I think he's rotational though, in that position, like most of these guys are. I think we'll see four-man fronts, but anytime there's obviously a three-man front, he'll be there. But I think we're going to see a heck of a lot of 3-3-5. Especially when you look at the defense as a whole, that the safeties, the cornerbacks, I feel really, really good about that umbrella back there, right? I feel good about our secondary.
I do too. Yes.
Linebackers, we're not in terrible shape there, right? I don't feel that a glaring need, as just so recently it was like a shit show back there, right? It looks pretty decent. It's this defensive line, this front, and if you play a defense that you only need three people on that front line, you can start rotating people and maybe use that 3-3-5 to your advantage. I just feel like that's going to be a defense we see a whole heck of a lot of, 40% of the time out there.
Well, and I know you guys talked about Devin Kennard last week when I wasn't here, but I think, you know, that's it. The flexibility that he brings in that role, where you can see him either as a Sam or as a edge, probably only a first and second down edge, because he's not like a pure pass rusher or anything like that. But that kind of flexibility is exactly what I think we're likely to see. I don't think, it's hard to wrap our heads around this, because we've seen, despite the fact that we thought that when Terrell Austin took over at DC, we thought that we'd be seeing more hybrid looks. We never really did. We saw almost exclusively nickel, you know, 4-4-2-5 looks, with the occasional extra linebacker in there, or the, you know, the dime package from time to time. But there really wasn't that much variation on the defensive line. We have to get our heads around that we are going to see different things on the defensive line, from game to game and from snap to snap and from, you know, series to series. And that's like it's almost uncomfortable, because like there's so much that can happen, like, that we don't know. But we're just, what they've clearly done is gotten, you know, the team is stacked with versatile players. They're not necessarily top end players, but there's a lot of players on this team that can do different things, multiple different things. And that's what I expect to see a lot of, is multiple different things in any given situation.
I can't argue I can't.
We're all in agreement on that. I like that. Well done, Casey.
A little kumbaya. I need a kumbaya drop. All right, let's move on. The Mule's back. He's been hired for the 476th season. Love Don. He's amazing at what he does. Orlovsky did a great breakdown of how good Muleback is of getting that ball there. He'll be standing around with a bag of Doritos for most of training camp, because he is a specialist and he doesn't have to work too hard. Anything we need to talk about with Don? Yay, Don's back, and that's about it, right?
Pretty much. I do wonder if they'll bring in like a camp snapper to like spell him, so he doesn't have to exert himself too much. I don't even know. But maybe they'll try to like turn. Maybe our friend Emmett Cleary will be the new backup snapper.
They hire a guy to make sure he's taking all his pills.
Yes.
And not eating the whole bag of Doritos, right? Okay.
You can give some to me on the side, as long as they're not that Cool Ranch crap.
Yeah, well, every time he goes down, right, when they do the practice, there's a little orange spot left in the field where his hand was in the dirt. All right, moving on from free agent signings.
You old ass motherfuckers are picking on poor Don as if you guys are spring chickens.
He's as old as I am. It doesn't matter. When you get old enough, you'll be doing these things to your compatriots as well. Don't you worry. I remember when I hit a sound. Never mind. Okay, so let's talk about that. Not a free agent, but looking good around town. Kerry Hyder out there after the Achilles. Man, you always worry about those kind of injuries. Doing a Play 60 event. Of course, he's in front of chicken biscuits and Doritos and animal crackers in a grocery store doing push-ups and stuff, right? But, you know, Play 60, stay healthy, have some animal crackers and some Chips Ahoy. But he looks good. I mean, he's up on his toes. He's got the whole body up. It looks like he's going to be back. What can we expect? Do you guys, you know, what do you think is going to happen with Kerry Hyder this year? Riz, is he back? Is he going to be as good as he was? Or is that really kind of a death sentence for a career?
I mean, it's tough to see him coming back and being what he was. But I do think his game wasn't necessarily predicated on being the most dynamic athlete. His thing was about being in the right place at the right time and using counter moves effectively. And I think he'll still be able to do that. This is not a guy that should be starting, but he's a guy that can come in and play a role for you. I kind of see him doing like sort of switching off with Christian Jones. When they want to get more athletic and more, you know, speedy, they can put Jones in. When they want to, you know, attack the run a little bit more and get beefier, then they bring Hyder in. That's my initial thought of what they're going to do with him. But I'm glad that he's coming back. He was a decent player before he got hurt.
Yeah, I liked him. He was a fun guy to watch. Case, do you have anything you want to say about Mr. Hyder?
No. It was unfortunate because we had just come off the whole thing with George Johnson, where he, you know, was a 1 year wonder for us, and Kerry Hyder appeared as though that might also be the case with him. But there was more reason to like what he did in terms of being sustainable than what George Johnson did. So it was bad timing, but you get an injury like that, and it's always like a total crapshoot for me. You have to lower expectations probably. But who knows? It's not like it would be the first time that a guy came off an injury like that and returned to form immediately. And if he came back and was what he was, if he and Zettel like are trading off on you know, being gritty, you know, being where they need to be, you know, when they need to be, as Riz said, type of players, all of a sudden, I think, you know, that having rotational, you know, I always want three defensive ends that and so if Hyder gets back to that level, then all of a sudden we've got a better system at defensive end than we've had in years.
Yeah. Medical technology has come a long way. I mean, do you remember? Well, hold on. Go ahead and sit down in the kids' table, Case. Do you remember, Riz, when people wouldn't come back from the ACLs? I mean, yes, and that switch flipped.
I had one last week.
I hate to bust on Case like that, but it's so easy. Oh,
my God. It's funny to watch, like you guys know I cover the Texans, and they had so many people that were hurt last year. And, like, Deshaun Watson tore his ACL. The first week of November, and he's like running almost full speed already. It's crazy. Like even 10 years ago, he wouldn't have even been walking without assistance yet.
Right.
The like you said, man, the medical advances there. It's unbelievable. It's awesome.
Yeah. You know, it's great. If they could just do that for concussion and CTE, we'd be in a whole happy place. But, what do you think? Let me ask you really quick about Abdullah, Riz, and what do you think about his, you know, We know there was a Liz Frank. We saw he was slower last year. Do you think there's going to – so do you think he did all his improvement from his injury in 1 year, or do you think there's more he can do in this offseason to get better faster and kind of try to reclaim back to where he was?
I think he can improve upon what he had last year. Having said that, I'll make one of my bold predictions sure to go wrong here so we can talk about it when it doesn't happen. I think he's going to get traded. And I think he's going to be, I think I said this on here last week. I know I said it on the air when I was in the radio station this week, was that I think he's the guy that's like, you pair Ameer Abdullah and a fourth round pick to get an extra third round pick. I think that's his fate. That's my bold prediction that y'all can laugh at me in another 6 weeks that didn't happen.
The bullshit.
That's actually, no, I agree. I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that. I like predicting trades is always, you know, a crapshoot. So, I mean, you're betting on a low percentage, but I won't surprise me in the least if that's what happens. So,
all right.
We're talking about trying to get second round picks. Well, he could be packaged with, a fourth or something like that and maybe a move up. I don't know.
But. Yep. Yeah, for sure. All right, so we talked about the free agent action. Who knows? Maybe we'll trade all those guys away and resign 104 more as soon as we're done recording. That seems to be the trend for this team. But let's take a look at the old Caparooney right now and see where things stand. Riz, you've got a good look at that for us. What do we got? $146 billion still to spend and some top stars left still in the market, right?
Roughly. We are not quite the federal government, but we're close in printing our own money here. they are currently looking at the NFLPA thing. Right now we have a total cap space available of $12,632,000. That does not include the rookie pool. They don't have that figure on here, but there's a certain allotment set aside for rookies that's taken out that's already taken out of that figure. So they still have $12.5 million to spend on free agents. They don't have a whole lot of pressing needs. It sure doesn't seem like they're going to sign a backup quarterback, which kind of surprises me. You know, I guess they're pretty happy with Jake Rudock. I know he was at Michigan's Pro Day on Friday and was basically one of the Lions' two reps there. They weren't all that interested in what was going on.
Yet they did go to see Johnny Manziel throw.
Yes, they did.
The Browns were at the Michigan Pro Day looking for O'Corn.
I can't even imagine
Martha Ford signing Johnny Manziel.
That would shock me.
Not happening.
Or Matt Patricia wanting to deal with him. But God, that'd be fun though. Oh man, you know how much money we'd make on this podcast off that, just selling Johnny Manziel stuff?
Oh my god. So, wait, Johnny Manziel, like the stuff on their mind.
he's click worthy, that's for sure.
So
there are, I mean, if you look around, the starting lineup other than left guard is basically set on both sides of the ball. I should say it could be set. Mm-hmm. I do think that the starting defensive end is coming in the draft, and I think that a starting running back is coming in the draft, but Blunt can certainly be that guy.
But so which one's that, coming in the first round?
I think it's going to be a pass rusher, defensive line.
I think you're right.
And
I just said I want three defensive ends, but actually what I really want is four defensive ends. So I want the future replacement for Ziggy Ansah so that they don't feel they absolutely have to re-sign him after this year.
Yep.
But yes, that's my personal want.
And when he goes down injured, you have somebody who can play the position for you, right?
Yeah.
If history holds true. So yeah, that's
so is that Landry? Is that the
I would be very happy with Harold Landry. The coaches clearly know him.
That's the name I'm looking at right now, especially after the Sylvester Williams signing, thinking that, defensive tackle is still like a future need because Williams is only on a 1-year deal. I think it shifts it slightly towards that edge player.
Yeah. And Marcus Davenport's going to be in the conversation. I'm not a fan.
I have to think he'll be gone, but
I believe so too. Although I'm trying to do a little bit of the draft mapping. I think you're going to see four quarterbacks in the first eight picks, and I think there's going to be Barkley will be off the board, Derwin James will be off the board, Chubb will be off the board, Quentin Nelson will be off the board. Unfortunately, yeah. God, if he fell to 20, yeah. though, my God, sprint to the podium.
Hell yeah. I'm with that.
let me ask you guys, because this is for our Michigan fans. What do you think about Mo Hurst? He's cleared.
He is cleared. He did not work out well, although at the same time, he hasn't been allowed to work out because of the heart ailment. So he was probably a little bit out of shape. He had a terrible three cone. It was, I'm trying to think what it was, but it was awful.
And, I mean, he could be this year's A'shaun Robinson. In my mind, he's somebody that could fall just because of some.
And the other thing is, he's 6'1", 292 pounds, not explosively athletic as some other guys that are in this class. That's an odd size. It's an odd position. He probably fits best in a straight 3-4 as a strong side defensive end. So and that could be a role that the Lions are looking at if they want to do that. I tend to think he's going to fall a little bit, though, just because
I think you're right. Yeah.
And there's a lot of people. And I heard this with scouts coming through Michigan last year that they think that Rashawn Gary created a whole heck of a lot for him. And I will not argue against that because Rashawn Gary is a freaking monster. Hmm. And it's a lot easier to play when you're playing next to a guy like that.
Yep.
And with good linebackers behind him, except Mike McCray, who can't run at all.
Yep. And we're coming up on your hardiversary here pretty soon. We'll be talking about it, like 2.5 months, right?
Yeah, that's right. June 2nd.
Yeah. All right. We'll get
So on the heart thing, as long as he's cleared and doesn't have to do anything medically for it, he'll be good. But one of the things that they're going to tell him is that your heart is a muscle. And it grows when you are pumping iron, you're building all your muscles. That includes your heart. That's a very bad thing if you've ever had an irregular heart. They will tell him not to get any bulkier and not to exert himself a whole lot in lifting weights. Now, my situation is where I actually had the surgery, but even like leading into the surgery, I knew about that I would have to have it years before I had it. Mm-hmm. And they told me, don't body build.
Is that how you catch that girlish figure?
Exactly. That's how
which puts a limit on where you could expect his future ceiling.
Right. The long and the short of it is he's not going to get any stronger than he is now.
That's a big knock.
And that's a bit of a problem at his size.
And his position, right? There's a big jump when you come from college to the NFL with the nutrition and the conditioning and stuff that comes with that. If he's not going to get any bigger, that's hard at that position to take a jump and sign a guy like that.
Yeah, so I tend to think he's going to fall out of the first round, which is a shame because there's a lot of things that I saw him at Michigan that says he'd be great as a first round pick, and right around the number 20 mark would be probably his sweet spot. But there are mitigating circumstances on it that you have to take into consideration.
Yeah, that sucks. Well, let's move on really quick so you guys know. I think you know, but maybe you forgot. Maybe you forgot because some of you guys are doing it, but you over there, yeah, and who's driving right now, listening, you went to Amazon straight. You didn't stop over Detroit Lions podcast, and you think Case with no pants on a podcast is bad? We'll send him straight to your house. He'll be busting into his pants free, and you ain't gonna want that.
I'll deliver them myself.
So, yeah, let's not forget, guys and gals, Amazon.com. Don't go straight there. Head over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and use the shop link, and you can get all your Amazon stuff there. It's the same thing if you want any sports merchandise, your Lions gear. You want to get the Michigan down in the Elite Eight now. You want to get some cool hoops gear. Head on over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com, and you can click on that link to Fanatics where it says get your Lions gear. You can get all kinds of gear there. That's the way to do it. And, of course, if you need any tickets to any shows, concerts, whatever you want to do, sporting events, same kind of deal. DetroitLionsPodcast.com and click on that shop link. It'll take you over to SeatGeek, and you can get those seats in all three of those places. Those are the only three places you need to go to get anything you need in life. I mean, I got something coming up next week. I'm not going to give it away, but I had to pick up some Verners. Let's leave it like that, okay? And Amazon, baby, straight to the door. No problem. Didn't even have to think twice about it. So anything you need in life comes from those three places. Just head over to DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Let them give us a kickback. Why does the man need all that money? Right? Kick a little back to your friends at the podcast and help us out. Help us grow. Help us do the stuff that we do for you every week. And you do it by doing something you were going to do anyway. All right. That'll wrap it up for this week in Reddit. Are you guys ready to talk to Dean? You ready for some excitement there?
Ready.
Give me Dean.
Or death.
Time for a different kind of breakdown with today's special guest.
All right, what a great guest we got. Joining us again is a longtime friend of the show, Dean Blandino. Dean was the former vice president of officiating for the NFL, and he's also the rules analyst for Fox Sports and a really newly minted crazy fan for the Detroit Lions. Dean, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm itching. The off season is already too long. I'm ready for some Lions football. Let's get back to it.
Yeah, absolutely. We are as well. We are all, we've been spastically looking at our computers for information about the Lions and free agency going on the last week here. And of course, obviously gearing up for draft related topics. But we have you, and we get you with a special set of knowledge and insight into what goes on in the league, and we're going to abuse that. So
sure, I like it.
Every time he's on, he's abused in one way or another.
I've never been abused by Lions fans or anyone related to Detroit
ever. So we've got the league meeting coming up next week. We are curious if you could tell us maybe what those actually look like, or any insight into how those meetings evolve. What does it look like inside the room?
What happens behind that closed door?
Yeah, I think because you always hear, you get reported that we're at the annual meeting, the league meetings, but what actually happens there? And it's just kind of like a state of the union for the NFL. And it's there's representation from every team, ownership, front office, all the head coaches
are there, and then there's a lot of league office people, and there's an agenda, and it starts with typically on Sunday the commissioner will give an address, and there are a lot of people. I've been a part of that address where some league office personnel will present on different topics and present on different issues, and everyone's there, and that kind of kicks it off. Sometimes there's a guest speaker that's involved, and then there's a couple of days, and there's a full agenda, and you have whether it's football operations issues, whether there's player personnel issues, there's breakout sessions, there's different things that all of the people from the different clubs can attend. And then most importantly, it's the voting process. So that's where all the rules changes, bylaw changes, anything, resolutions, all of these things are going to be voted on by the 32 clubs. So the competition committee goes through all of it. They're just wrapping up their meetings now down in Florida, and then they go right into the league meeting, and they have a voting process, and it's in a room, and you have two people from each club, and they go through and they present the rules change, and then they go through each club, and it's either a yes or no. You can abstain.
Is it a public vote, or is it like a ballot?
No, it's a secret. It's a public vote in terms of the people in the room. Sure. So it's okay, Arizona, yes, no. And it's very traditional. You would think in 2018 it would be, you know, there'd probably be some technology involved, but it's really very traditional in terms of, okay, they go down the line and it's yes and no, or we abstain, and they keep track. And then at the end, if it's you have to have 75%. So 24 of the 32 clubs have to vote yes in order for a rule to pass, and they tally it up, and then the rule either passes or it doesn't.
Has Jerry Jones ever challenged anyone to a fight or chest bumped anybody along the way here?
You know, it's interesting. No, there's never been, at least in my experience, there's never been a physical altercation. There have been some pretty heated arguments and pretty heated discussions in that room. And it's funny because there are certain owners that are more vocal in the room than others. And you tend to know, the people in the room that you can pretty much guess who's going to get up and speak. Usually it's the same set of owners that are more vocal, and some of the others just kind of sit back and listen, and their vote counts the same, but they may not be as vocal about it.
Right. But it's generally the same rogues gallery of characters.
I'm picturing a scene out of like 1776 with John Adams in a powdered wig and John Hancock.
And the gavel and that type of thing.
There's probably some powdered wigs in there.
Exactly.
So let's talk about that. Any interesting stories that you can think of from historically? I mean, and look, we don't want you to – yeah, we want you to out people, but of course we don't want you to. We like you. We want you to keep coming on the show and not have a dreadful boating accident as a result.
Yeah, exactly.
But some stories, some of the stuff that's happened in the past that either raised an eyebrow or made you laugh. Anything kind of stands out for you?
Well, one that always stands out for me that was funny is that we would have a meeting. We'd have several meetings throughout the weekend and into the week with the coaches, with the head coaches, and it would start on Sunday, and we'd have all the head coaches in the room, and we'd talk about officiating issues, and trust me, that I've always
that
had
sounds like fun,
skin, but you need thick skin. Like I would sit at one end of the room and I would look around and no one would be sitting next to me. Everybody would be, because they didn't want to get hit by a stray bullet. So it's one of those things where, you know, you get all the coaches in the room and you try to, you know, hear them out and get their input. But we would also, then we would break them out into smaller groups, and we would have a session with the first time head coaches. So this is for like the Lions, Matt Patricia. This is the first time he's going to be a head coach in the NFL. He's going to go to that meeting. So we would have that. And I remember in my first year as the vice president of officiating, and I love this, is he's one of my favorite people in the world, John Fox, who was coaching, you know, Panthers, right, and coached the Bears, has been a head coach in this league for a very long time.
Right.
He shows up for the meeting, first time head coach meeting. And I said, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I'm here for the meeting." I said, "This is your first year as a head coach." And he looked at the agenda and he's like, "You know, damn it, I didn't pay attention. You know, I thought I didn't look at the agenda closely enough." So okay, fine, not a big deal. So the next year, same meeting, he shows up again. So I mean, you're not reading your agenda, and I kid you not, 3 years in a row, he showed up to the same meeting. First time head coach. And he's the best. I love him. I'm excited that he's going to be on ESPN. But he's one of the funniest people I've ever met. And he just showed up for that meeting 3 years in a row. It was hilarious.
He just wanted to make sure he didn't miss anything.
Right? He didn't want to miss anything. Exactly.
I assume that's the meeting where you tell all the, you know, first year head coaches that it's all fixed. And if they release that to the public, then you'll have like a member of their family.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. We take a hostage from their family and make sure. Exactly. Right, so they get the real rundown.
I understand.
See, he does. That strategy is just too smooth. It rolls off the tongue. Like I don't know. Maybe he really does.
Well, obviously, we are a Lions podcast, and we're just curious if you've seen any thing of interest that came out of Lions personnel, be it Martha or be it former, you know, team president Luan or anything like that, or anything of interest that particularly to us in that realm.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, I think Martha is one of those owners that is. In those meetings, she's more of a sit back and listen and take it in. But I know that she's been very vocal with the commissioner, and she definitely speaks her mind. But in those meetings, I think she's more of a sit back, take it in, that kind of thing. You know, Tom was more vocal. I think he got involved in some of the discussions, and Coach Caldwell was always, I really enjoyed Coach Caldwell, and he was very, very reasonable, very even keeled in those meetings. Some coaches are less than even keeled in those meetings, but for the most part, you know, they really, there was nothing that stood out in terms of, you know, nothing outrageous. It's just a professional organization, and everybody conducted themselves that way.
Sure. Did Belichick make you feel like you were losing every negotiation? Because it seems like that's where it ends up when he deals with everybody else.
I feel like I've always had a good relationship with Bill, and I enjoy Bill because, you know, no, he really understands the importance of understanding the rules and what they do in New England. You know, when they bring in first year players and they take them through the differences between the college rules and the NFL rules, and he really drills it with his players. And we, you know, we always had really good discussions about the rules in different situations. So I always enjoyed that about Bill. And he's just, you know, he's an intelligent person, and he's obviously a brilliant football mind. Always really, really emphasize the rules and that I always appreciated that because obviously that's my background.
It's interesting because his mind is like no one else's. He's splitting out ineligible receivers with the eligible in a blocking position. It's just thinking that nobody else has come up with, and it's incredible to see that play out. Have you had any interactions with Bob Quinn? I know you guys that weren't necessarily in the roles you as the VP of officiating and him as a GM at the time, but did you get any opportunity to interact with him and kind of get a look at him?
Yeah, there was some overlap. I think Bob's first, what was Bob's first year? Was that 16 or 15?
I'm forgetting now. I think it was 15. This will be his third draft.
There was definitely some overlap. 16. So he, Bob's great. Obviously comes from New England, but he, Bob was one that would on game day, you know, emails, text messages, and he, you know, he would get a little fired up about some of the officiating stuff, not in a bad way, but just wanting to know, you know, hey, was that the right call? You know, what happened on that play? So Bob, in my experience, was always very engaged. I enjoyed talking to him. But again, a guy that very passionate, I'll put it to you that way, in terms of, you know, on game day, what was going on with the Lions.
Sure. And now with him and Matt Patricia there, it's just eased you into this super fan mode with the Lions. That's very
cool. Oh, yeah.
All right, let's talk about a couple things that are up for discussion at the league meeting this week here. The first one, I think, is the catch rule. And there's some conversation going to happen about this. Let's just kind of explain what's going on with it, if you don't mind, and then kind of where your head is at on it, and then what you think the outcome will be from the league, if you can make a prediction.
Yeah, I think – you know, this is a subject that has been discussed by the competition committee for years, and obviously it's a rule that, you know, going back, I mean, this goes back. You had the Calvin Johnson play, which obviously you guys are intimately involved in and remember
that. Who's Calvin Johnson? Never heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. You may have heard of him. And then, you know, that you've had several plays that have created a lot of discussion about this rule. And this isn't new, this debate about what is a catch. This goes back a long time. And, you know, I think basically the easiest way to explain the change is that the player that's going to the ground to make the catch, if they can perform an act common to the game, so if they can reach the ball out, if they can take an additional step, two plus, you know, an additional step, if they can do something with the football, then the requirement to hold on to it when you land is no longer necessary for it to be a catch. So maybe this
Jesse Jones catch this year that got overturned was like the straw that broke the camel's back there? Or
I think Jesse James, I think what the committee did, and this is something they've done in the past, and I've been a part of it, is they looked at these plays and then try to write a rule to make these plays catches. And I think the Jesse James play was a significant play as part of this discussion this year. And they said, okay, we want this to be a catch. How do we make it a catch? And so the only way to do that is to say the fact that he reached the ball out for the goal line, that is basically going to supersede him having to hold on to it when he lands. Sure. And I think that's something, you know, an act common to the game, that language, it's not new language. It's been in the book as recently as 2014. Mm-hmm. It was described differently in 2015.
Move, right?
Yeah. Football move, you know, becoming a runner. It's all basically the same concept. It's doing something other than controlling 2 feet and it's having the ball long enough to do something with it. So I think that's the change. I think, if you want to make those plays catches, this is the way to do it. I think the rule is well written. But I think, you know, it's not going to solve all the issues with this rule because there's still a subjective element to it. You know, we're going to be sitting there going, well, did he perform an act common to the game? And that's going to be the debate versus did he go to the ground and lose it when he hit the ground? So I think we're still going to have the discussion about the catch rule because there is a subjectivity element to it.
Sure.
And we just have to, you know, we'll have to see how it goes next year.
So it sounds like you think that's going to get through.
I do. I think that's going to get through. I think that'll pass. I think there's been a lot of discussion about it. I think the big thing here is, you're not talking about a lot of plays. You know, every year it seems to be four or five plays that people get, have this debate about. And so I do think it's gonna go through. And I think, we'll just see again. I think we're going to have more catches. We're going to have more catch fumbles. I think there's going to be some of those things. There probably will be some growing pains with the rule, but I think ultimately, I think the committee did what they set out to do, which was to write a rule that makes some of these plays, whether it's Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant, or Jesse James, a catch.
Can I tell you the one thing I think about it that bothers me more than anything else? It has nothing to do with the plays themselves. It's the commentators who consistently undermine the rules themselves by saying, nobody understands this. Nobody. They fuel that fire like crazy. Am I wrong here? Do those guys need to get some training on, you know, the specifics of the rules?
Well, there's no question that when somebody, you know, that's on the air that has a lot of credibility says, I don't know what a catch is, that creates this hysteria about the rule when it really the rule prior to this change was not a complicated rule. It was basically, and it was a rule that had been in place for a long time. It was basically, you know, hold on to the ball when you hit the ground. I mean, maintain control. That's really it. It's that people didn't really, you know, want to accept the fact that you could hit the ground even though you reached it out for the goal line and that would still be incomplete. So I think one of the things, you know, in my first year at Fox Sports, you know, which was great for me to be able to work with all of our talent, all of our on-air talent, all of our production people and at Fox Sports, they're really, really dedicated to making sure that what we say on the air is accurate. And we've really done, a lot of work in that area. And I think it's a good point because when somebody comes out and says, you know, I don't know what a catch is or I don't understand this, it creates, you know, this controversy about the rule that maybe it isn't as controversial as people think.
Yeah, no,
that's fair. You said it's still, I mean, it's going to fix some of these things. There's still going to be questions about it. Is there anything Is there any way that you would rewrite the rule to make take out that subjectiveness and make it more clear cut?
You know, I think what they set out to do, I think it's really well written. Again, I like the more black and white of hold on to the ball when you hit the ground. Mm-hmm. I get mm-hmm. the fact that there are going to be plays that look like catches that in reality should be catches. But I've always said that you're going to sacrifice those handful of plays for greater consistency in the overwhelming majority of plays.
Actually, so, I agree with that. Regardless of the Calvin Johnson situation, I think I entirely agree with that. I don't like building more subjectivity into the rule.
Yeah, and I think that was always the issue, and that's the question when I get asked, well, why is the committee changing it now? Why haven't they changed it in the past? Well, because that was a concern. It was a concern of, you know, do you change a rule to fix a couple of plays and then create less consistency right. on a bigger number of plays? So we'll see if how it plays out. Hopefully that's not what happens. Hopefully, but again, you have to remember. And what this is really, and this is the reality, as technology gets better, you know, we're writing this rule really for instant replay. Whereas in the past, it's crazy. Because in the past, look, rules are written for on-field officials to make calls in real time. They see it once and they have to make a call. And that's how rules are written. This is really a replay rule. And again, it's kind of where we're headed because of the technology, because the ability to review plays. And not necessarily, you know, a bad thing. We just have to make sure that we're not impacting the officials' ability to make calls on the field consistently.
I was going to ask you if you thought that was a good or a bad thing. I mean, look, I love technology, right? The fact that we're doing this right now is a gift of technology. But do you think that it's in aggregate hurting the game and is, you know, the spirit of the game and the speed of the game? Or do you think that this is giving us a better leeway and a better look to make sure that we get it right?
Yeah, I think there's a balance. I think it's technology has been, there have been so many advancements in the last however many 20 years that have been unbelievable since I've been involved with the NFL, and it really made the game better, whether it's officiating wise, safety related, they've really made the game better. But there, you have to make sure that we draw that line where it's not going to become too much, because you talk about the pace of the game and are we going to like this rule, is this rule going to create more calls being reviewed and more stoppages during the game? So it's just creating that balance of, you need the technology to make sure that games are not decided by incorrect calls, but mm-hmm. it can't be overkill where we're stopping the game, you know, 10, 12 times a game to review plays mm-hmm. and really just killing the pace and killing the flow, because that's not an attractive game to watch.
And it's tough on the people in the stadium too, because they just never get enough information when all that's going on, and then they get.
Exactly.
Yep. Oh, I'll never forget that Titans game that we played a few years ago. That was just we lost the game, but I didn't feel like we lost the game, and I didn't feel like they won the game. I just didn't feel like there was a game, and that is my nightmare situation.
That was for Triplett, wasn't it?
I remember that game very well. That I think that was I don't know how many fouls there were in the game. There were a bunch of replays.
Nobody was able to get a flow going
exactly.
at any point exactly. in that game. So
Eric Ebron got called for offensive pass interference.
Right. Well, I know.
But I remember that game.
There were bad penalties. Well, I mean, there were a lot of penalties. So it's you know,
there's bound to be a few.
It was just a nightmare of a game to watch. Like, there was no enjoyment. Even if we'd won, I think I would have walked away from that one like, ooh, Jesus. So,
all right. Well, hey, let's move on. So another piece of the rules that we're looking at the league meeting is around pass interference. And what does that mean? What's going to happen? This is really interesting. And I'm really anxious to hear what you have to say about it, Dean.
Yeah, so there seems to be I know that there was some conversation about going to the college rule, and that's the college rule basically says that it's a spot foul until you go beyond 15 yards, and then it's just a 15-yard penalty. And that's worked in the college game, but the NFL has always been hesitant to make that change, because the feeling is that the spot foul is the ultimate deterrent, that you have better athletes in the NFL.
You have savvier players, yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about the best of the best. Your defensive backs are just, they're better athletes than they are in college. And, you know, would you basically take away the long pass, you know, the deep pass, by just, if I'm beat, I'm not going to give up a 40 yard gain. I know the worst I can do is 15 yards. So I'm just going to tackle the receiver. And that's always been the concern. You know, you get into the Hail Mary at the end of the game. Look, with 6 seconds left and they're snapping it from the 50 and they throw the Hail Mary, you know, you tackle the receiver, the worst they're going to do is get another play from the 35 versus at the 1 yard line. So those have been the concerns. I don't think the committee is in favor of making that change, but there seems to be some momentum amongst the clubs. So it'll be interesting to see. I would anticipate pass interference staying the same. I would not anticipate a change there.
It seems, well, and there was a caveat to the rule that I read in terms of what's being proposed, that if the officials thought that the pass interference was, intentional
or flagrant,
that it would, you know, that they would be able to make it a spot foul beyond 15 yards. And while, like, and Chris and I talked about this, and it that adds, you know, a whole different type of subjectiveness to it. At the same time, like,
I've always hated that. It's less subjective overall, though. It's a smaller swath of subjectiveness.
Right. And so personally, myself, I'd be in favor of the change, because I feel like it's a meeting of the two areas. I do understand how they could still end up in a situation where somebody's going to be upset about the way something is called, no matter,
exactly
how.
And no one, believe me, I lived it. No one hates a 40-yard pass interference penalty that's wrong. I mean, that's just, those are game changing calls.
And we've had that happen to us. I remember Nevin Lawson getting one on a deep Packers play that lost us a game. Yeah. So, but
it is. I mean, isn't that, and I'm not knocking him because he's a great quarterback, but Aaron Rodgers, the end of the game, they're down, he throws it deep and pulls this pass interference every time. And it's like, that just doesn't feel like the game of football, right? And it just seems to take something away from it, which is why I kind of like this. You know, that's just a roll of the dice at that point, rather than really playing the game. And it's just, this is why I like the rule proposal, because it takes some of that away and says, no, play the game, be a better team, and go win it. Don't just roll the dice down the field.
Sure.
All right. So there's one more topic, and this is I think really interesting and has the opportunity to create some real change. Ejections, player ejections being called in from the league office for egregious plays. What do you got here?
This is a proposal that, so I think the key is there's a flag on the field. So the officials witness the action, and typically this is going to be non-football action. So this is going to be something that occurs outside the normal course of the game. Somebody throwing a punch, kicking.
Rob Gronkowski, you know, and the elbow drop.
Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, I think the Gronkowski play is a great example of the officials throw the flag, but they don't eject the player. And I think that's where the committee wants. Then if that's the case, and the members of the officiating department that are in the game day central in New York, they see it, they can then call to the crew and they say, no, you know what, 87 is going to be disqualified from the game. So I think that's the perfect example of a flag is thrown. The crew on the field does not disqualify the player, but the group in New York says, no, we're going to disqualify the player, and then he's basically out of the game.
I can approve of that. I mean, it gives a more objective, you know, and a chance to actually review it. And I think there are things that I like about the way the NBA runs things, and there are things I don't like. But one of the things I do like is that kind of situation where they'll go back and review what a player has done, and then make the decision. And so I think that's probably a positive thing. Hopefully it's not something that comes up a lot, but
exactly. And I don't think it will. I do think it's a positive in that, because sometimes the officials on the field, you know, they're seeing it from ground level. They're seeing it from their perspective, and it may not seem as egregious as it looks when everybody gets to see it on replay. And so I think it just gives the league an opportunity that if a player really should be disqualified, that he is disqualified, and it's just called fairly. And again, if this happens three or four times a year, that would be a lot.
Yeah. And it may change some players' approach as well. I mean, if you think about it from a safety perspective, knowing that, hey, I can hide it from the guy on the field, but I can't hide it from Game Day Central. that might change some things as well. So hopefully that works well for the players. But no, good stuff there. I know. So there's a question here. I'm going to leave this to Case because this is Case's, and I think this is he's going to be able to articulate it better than I will.
when you pass the buck, it makes me nervous. When you walk.
All right. So okay. So we bring you on the show. This is your third time we've had you, and we absolutely love having you. But every time we bring you on the show, we mostly stick to rules related things. I expect that's kind of what you get in most of the media things you have to do. You have to talk about, you know, the stuff that everybody expects you to talk about. Well, we're going to give you, you know, an opportunity to actually talk a little football. Now,
okay.
We're going in a little bit of a middle area to start off here, but I want to ask you about Patricia himself.
Yeah.
So we got a whole t-shirt thing and the like kind of a perceived renegade attitude and coming from the Patriots where screw the rules. And I want to know, how is bringing Patricia on as our head coach going to make the NFL screw us over even worse than they already?
Well, you know, it's. Again, there's that secret room at the NFL that where all the strings are being pulled and everything is really happening, and then that's, you know, Vince McMahon style. That's all happening there. But that aside, you know, I think, you know, my experience with Matt has been great. I've always enjoyed, you know, I'd go up and see the Patriots every year in the off season and meet with them and I would never book a flight and you know, we set aside 2 hours for those meetings typically. I would always book either a flight the next day or real late that night, because I always knew that I was going to sit with, you know, coordinators. I was going to sit with Matt after the general meeting and go through a lot of plays. And one of the I remember with Matt and I think it was him and Steve Belichick. We were looking at, he wanted me to look at some pick plays, you know, where offensive pass interference and receivers running crossing routes and picking defenders. And he wanted me to look at those. And, you know, we were looking at a bunch, and it was a lot of, you know, the obviously Patriot opponents. And, you know, and I said, you know, I was joking around. I said, you know what, you guys are pretty good at this too on the offensive side. You know, you guys are pretty good at running picks too. And he, you know, he used a little more colorful language, but he was basically like, screw those guys. I don't care about the offense. I care about the defense. So I had to laugh when he said that, but I think you're talking about a guy that I think he has an engineering degree. I mean, he's a smart, smart guy, and obviously comes from a great coaching tree. And so, you know, obviously I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to do well with the Lions. And I think his, you know, I think he'll be good. He's got a good personality. I think he'll be good with the media. I don't anticipate him, you know, being, you know, giving him too much, but I think he's going to be good all across the board.
That's awesome.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Love it. All right. So with that, I know we've taken a lot of your time, and you've been so great as always, Dean, but we do have a little bit of an announcement we want to make. And this is a big deal. Dean has decided that he is going to join us as a regular contributor to the show. He's not going to be on every week. I mean, he likes us, but he can't drink that much Verner's. He's going to do the day job. But we're going to have him come back. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. I think maybe, you know, what goes on in Game Day Central in New York on game day. That would be great to talk about. How he wrestles Mike Piera on to see who gets to make the call on the big calls on Fox. But Dean's going to join us for a lot of different stuff going forward. And Dean, I got to thank you. It's really awesome of you to do that with us and really break down the game from a different perspective.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Always enjoy coming on with you guys.
All right, my man. All right, we'll get you a nickname here soon. Everybody that comes on winds up with a nickname, and I promise it'll be respectful. I mean,
very good. Yeah.
All right, Dean Blandino, thank you so much for joining us, man. It was great to have you on the show.
All right, guys, take care.
All right, thanks, Dean. That's going to do it for this week. And remember, we're looking for your involvement. Use those comments in the subreddit. We've had some great conversations the last couple of weeks. And, you know, that feedback really helps us make this show better. It is a community-owned show, and if you don't take part, well, you're not an owner, are you? You're just a listener. So that's the way it is. Don't forget to check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast. patreon.com/Detroit Lions Podcast or on DetroitLionsPodcast.com. Click on the Patreon link. Anything you could share, we most greatly and most definitely appreciate. Also on the Facebooker, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, facebook.com/TheDetroitLionsPodcast, and on the Twitter machine, give us a follow at DETLionsPodcast, DETLionsPodcast, the very best place to see the Kacer.
Sans pantalon.
Yet again. Give us a call via Skype, Detroit Lions Podcast, all one word, Detroit Lions Podcast, or call us in the Lions line, 929-33-LIONS. It's 929-335-4667. Also, you're rolling around, you're doing your shopping, you're doing all the Patreon stuff. Don't forget to go to DetroitLionsPodcast.com and subscribe to the podcast. That way, we get to come inside your little box automatically, and gosh, that's joyful. Thank you for tuning in, and we're going to see you next time on the Detroit Lions Podcast. It's your Detroit Lions and Reddit connection.
Final seconds winding down, and look at that. How big is that? Chris and Case out of time. Pack the bags, start the plane. This show is over.
I would love to see him come and do what he can do.